Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy New Year, everybody. Great to have you with us here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Of course, yesterday was the Rose Bowl, and our Monday show is always brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have been with us for decades. And, again, the Purdy's have done a great job of always making sure that their customers' needs come first. They find you the best insurance, the right price, and they do so in such a way where you know you're covered. You also know that your budget is covered. And if there's a claim, the Purdy's act as if it happened to them. I don't care whether it's personal auto, business, commercial insurance, whatever it may be. They have a division of insurance that fits your needs. And again, you know, on insurance where they can go across state lines to get you the right coverage and the best price, they'll do so. It's all at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A lot of fun on today's show. We'll talk with Jordan Rodrigue today from the Charlotte Observer. She spent the last half of the season covering the Carolina Panthers after spending the first half of the season covering Penn State football. We'll talk to her about what it's like to cover the NFL and to cover the Carolina Panthers. Also in the next half hour, Bob Soci, the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. In the 4 o'clock half hour, John Oram from Sports Business Journal will break down the contracts that the Big Ten is going to have when it comes to looking at the TV contracts coming up. They've only let out little bits and pieces, like, for example, the Friday night package. But they haven't really announced really what the deal is. It's a six-year deal in the end. John will talk about that. He's the one that broke the story. I mean, he gets all the credit for that. Final half hour, Kim Jones of NFL Network is going to join us. Tomorrow's show will be from Ann Arbor because the Nittany Lion basketball team will be in action taking on Michigan. That game will tip off at 8:30 tomorrow night. The airtime is set for 8 o'clock from Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor. So tomorrow's show will be from Ann Arbor as we continue our road trip going from the coast to Detroit. You can tell it's a job when it's that kind of travel pattern. And then the week is going to cap off with a really interesting game, and that will be Penn State, Michigan State at the Palestra in Philadelphia. Penn State with six players on the team from Philly. Tony Carr, Lamar Stevens, Nazir Bostic, Mike Watkins, Julian Moore, Shep Garner. So getting back into Philly is a high priority for Patrick Chambers. There's no question about that. The place is already sold out. It's going to be packed. Over 9,000 will be on hand. It's going to be loud in there. If you've never been in the Palestra, one of the absolutely great arenas in this country in all of sports, it gets loud because of how it's designed, and it reverberates in there. Now, for Michigan State, of course, you know, this game at the Jordan Center would have done well on Saturday. It would have done well. The students are not here. I mean, they'll start trickling back this weekend. Classes will begin next Monday. I know I have to teach my first class next Monday. And, you know, they would be trickling back for a 1 o'clock in the afternoon game. So some students would have come out, but it also wasn't on the season ticket plan for them either because it's during term break. The local attendance would have been good. It's Michigan State, so it's a name that comes in that people understand, that they recognize. I get all that. So the attendance at the Jordan Center would have been good. But down in Philly, it went like that. It was an automatic sellout. Now, for Michigan State, it's not a question of not playing in the Jordan Center. You know, it's like, hey, great, we're going to play them on a neutral court. They know it's not a neutral court. They know it. They got it. They understand that completely. But one of the key elements for this, for them, is for Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo, You know, you have your old bucket list as to what you want to do. I always wanted to work with the suit. Check that off. We're done. Okay. Just having some fun. But, you know, Tom Izzo's coached everywhere in his career. He's coached at Rupp. He's coached at Assembly Hall. He's coached at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. He has coached at Cameron Indoor and so forth. But he had never coached a game at the Palestra. And Patrick Chambers wants to bring his program into Philadelphia. And we're going to do Friday's show from Philly and talk more about this. But when you look at, for Tom Izzo, in the great career he's had, that's one place he always wanted to coach. Was on that list. You know, I wanted to coach. I'd love to coach at Fog Allen, done that. Cameron Indoor, done that. Rupp, done that. Assembly Hall, done that. Dean Dome, done that. Well, the Palestra was one of those places that he had never coached before. So he and Patrick Chambers got together. The date was just right, January 7th, a Saturday, term break, where Penn State could move a game out of the Jordan Center because it was term break and bring it into Philadelphia where they sold it out. That's a really intriguing one. It's going to be 1 o'clock on Saturday at the Palestra in Philadelphia. First things first, though, Ann Arbor tomorrow, 8:30. 8 o'clock will be the airtime, and tomorrow's show will be in Ann Arbor. And looking forward to that. Coming up, we will talk with Jordan Rodrigue of the Charlotte Observer about the NFL and the Carolina Panthers as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jordan Rodrigue has joined us many times before as the Penn State football beat writer for the Center Daily Times. Mid-season, though, she transitioned out of that job into a great opportunity with the Carolina Panthers working for the Charlotte Observer to be the beat writer with the Carolina Panthers with Joe Person, who joined us several times last year. Joe grew up in Williamsport, so a great local connection for him. And now Jordan joins him down in Charlotte covering the Carolina Panthers. And Jordan, we'll start with this. What has been like for you to transition from covering college football, which you had done your entire career, to now covering the NFL?
It's been pretty fast-paced, as you might imagine. It's something new to learn and to discover every single day. I have a really, really great partner on my beat in Joe Person, who has just been a wonderful resource for me. And, just trying to hit the ground sprinting, and I think I've done that so far. And all of a sudden, here we are. We got two games left. It's been pretty wild.
All right. It's been interesting with Cam Newton. What's it been like to cover Cam Newton? And also the next part is he's absorbed maybe a few more hits than other people, in part because of style. What's it been like covering that, and what are some of the questions and answers you're getting on that?
You never really know what you're going to get when Cam steps up to the podium. What you do know is that you're going to get a wild outfit, so you always got to be ready for that. It was pretty cool last week. His suit, it was pretty loud, shall I say, and it was a tribute to the late Craig Sager. He had some really nice things to say about Craig, and so that was pretty cool. But he always definitely brings his own unique twist to things. He has taken a lot of hits, and I am firmly rooted in the camp that sometimes he doesn't get the calls that he should. And we saw this last week against Washington when he kind of took a helmet-to-helmet shot as he slid by Trent Murphy. And later on in the game, KK Short pushed Kirk Cousins out of bounds and then got flagged. So it's interesting. It was with the same crew. We had a chance to talk to the crew after the game, and he's, you know, he kind of stood by, you know, he sees the game in real time, and this is what he saw. He didn't see helmet-to-helmet contact. It's pretty obvious on the replay, but I understand. I understand that referees can't often have the benefit of slowing things down, and they often have to make the call on the fly. But, yeah, Cam definitely has taken some of those hits this year. Yeah. And I think that this offseason, especially during owners' meetings, there's going to be a deeper look at kind of referee reform and some of these things. And Cam has been specific. He doesn't expect these calls when he's – I mean, he wants the pocket to be safe, obviously, but he doesn't expect these calls necessarily when he's on the run. He understands when he's a runner, if he gets hit low or something, that's just a part of the game. But when it's a helmet-to-helmet contact that specifically is stated in the rule book, even if it's a running back or a receiver who's on a run play, that is not allowed. And so him missing these calls is just – it's just become another – you know, another week, another missed call. So it's just kind of become lay of the land here.
Yeah. Luke Kuechly, that's a really tough situation with him.
Yeah.
How bad really was it, and how smart are the Panthers saying, hey, look, just lay low, okay? There's no need for you to play right now.
Well, I 100% agree with what the Panthers are doing with Luke. I think that long-term health, I think, is of the utmost importance, especially with the amount that they have invested in Luke Kuechly. I mean, he is the future of that franchise. He and Cam Newton, they are both the future of that franchise, and they are the present of that franchise. And so when you don't have, I mean, you have a less than 1% chance of making the playoffs. I mean, two teams have to tie, for God's sake. You can't risk things like this. And Kuechly is of the personality where, you know, yes, he understands the risks, but he wants to be out there with his teammates. Taking him off the field is, I mean, this is his whole life. But I do think that the coaches are making and the doctors are absolutely making the right call. I 100% agree with this. I definitely agree with the kind of the gray line that they're walking. They're making sure that Kuechly is heard and respected in terms of his wanting to play. But they are also making sure that they're firm on game day and making sure he does what's best for his health.
And what's interesting is the guy had stepped up right away and said, hey, look, I absolutely agree with this, Cam Newton. Because Newton, that's one thing I've always noticed about Newton. He really has a depth of respect for Kuechly. You can tell right away how he feels about him.
Well, first and foremost, he has a depth of respect for Kuechly, but he also has a depth of respect now more than he ever had before for what a concussion can do to a person.
Yeah.
Cam has been really at his best up there at the podium for a really surprising thing, which has been talking about long-term effects of concussions and talking about concussion research and the league admitting that there is a correlation between neurodegenerative brain diseases and football. And Cam has really been very well-spoken and just really it's been really refreshing to hear a player of his status to speak up the way that he has. And I think that his teammates respect that. A couple of the guys in the locker room are even admitting, you know, the concussion protocol exists to protect us from ourselves. And I think that says a lot about kind of the mood that this team has toward concussions. And I definitely think it's not saying that the players don't want to play. It's just saying that they're kind of respecting an injury that they cannot see, where in years past they probably wouldn't have.
In talking with Joe Person, who's graced us with his presence on the show many times, and talking with him and then your own personal observations, why haven't the Panthers hit on some of the cylinders they hit on last year? I mean, let's face it, 15-1-1's hard to duplicate, but instead of being 15-1, you could be 11-5, for example. Why hasn't that happened?
A lot of it has been they've suffered some injuries that they did not have last year. Last year they were working with an offensive line that was just healthy the whole year through. And this year, you know, they lost their Pro Bowl center, then they lost his backup, then they lost their left tackle, then they switched over, you know, they shuffled around the line, then they're playing the third string center. You know, it's just all these things that have kind of thrown them for a loop. And then, you know, the secondary was so young. So those things combined with each other really did not spell a lot of success. They also have not put the hammer down like they should have in some of these really tight games. And there was a stretch there where they had lost 7 games by a field goal or less, or they had played 7 games that had been decided by a field goal or less, and they lost 5. And that can't happen, especially in these tight games the Panthers were winning last year. So I think that they are very aware of it, and they're by all accounts, they're bringing back a lot of the same personnel next year. So, yeah, I think they might have their act together a little bit as we head into the off season.
Jordan, what's the learning curve been like for you in this league on this level? What do you know now that you didn't even realize before you took the job?
Just factoring in the money. I mean, it's just you always have to think about that now. That's obviously something you don't really have to think about unless you're covering a coaching search in college. But factoring in the money and definitely, I mean, I was well aware of concussions, and I was well aware of how it's kind of having a trickle-down effect in college and high school football. But the depth of I guess what's still unknown and what's still – it feels like the league is playing catch up to these things. The fact that they're saying something and the concussion protocol exists, I think that's great. But it does feel like they're playing catch up to a lot of these things, and mm-hmm. there's still so much that they don't know. So I think that's been really, really interesting to kind of explore.
One final question, then I'll let you go, and appreciate your time so much. Watching Penn State from afar, what was it like for you?
I have been watching.
Something that you started with this season, and then from afar to see how it finished. To this point, there's still one more game. What were your thoughts in watching it play out?
You know, I have FOMO, Steve. I honestly do. You know, you see that commercial where you say you have fear of missing out. I definitely have that. I grew up watching teams go to the Rose Bowl, you know, growing up on the West Coast, and I was raised to really have a strong dislike for USC and Pete Carroll and like all that stuff. So it just really, man, I have a little bit of FOMO right now, and I've been communicating a little bit with a couple players and coaches and on the team, and I'm just so happy for them. I mean, now that I don't cover them, you can really say that there's some really good kids on that team, and I think that's just really impressive what they've done, and those kids deserve it, honestly. They really do.
Well, at some point you'll cover a Super Bowl, and then we can say that back to you.
Well, I'm waiting for that. I thought maybe that might be this year, but I was so wrong.
You know, you'd be amazed after a great year, and then there's a slump, how teams rebound and then come right back with a great year. It happens a lot on that level. So you might be closer to it than you realize.
I'm hoping so, Steve. I really am.
Jordan, to you and your family, happy holidays. Thanks so much. It was so great to hear you again.
Thanks, guys. I take this kind of as a Christmas present to me to be able to speak with you all again. So I really appreciate it.
Jordan Rodrigue joining us from the Charlotte Observer. We'll talk to her many times over the next few years as she covers the NFL as well. Bob Soucy made the transition from college to the pros as well, from the Navy play-by-play announcer to being the New England Patriots play-by-play announcer. He's coming up in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance and Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history, first regular season college basketball game played at Madison Square Garden in New York. NYU defeated Notre Dame 25-18. Babe Ruth, 1937, became a baseball manager of the Class D DeLand Reds of the Florida State League. Will Chamberlain, 60 points against the Lakers on this date in 1961. Wayne Gretzky, 100th point in his 35th game of the season in 1984. He was a great play-by-play guy at Navy. Because of that, he became a great play-by-play guy with the New England Patriots. Our pleasure to have on Bob Soci, the outstanding play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. Hi, Bob.
It's great to hear you too, Steve, and thank you very much for the kind words. I really appreciate them. I think that... you know, you're probably overstating my my abilities, because but coming from you as one of the best in the business too, I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much. For you, let's talk about this season. This is an odd dynamic season for the Patriots because of the Brady suspension. Were you surprised in any way, and was Scott Zolak surprised in any way, that Brady showed so little rust once he got going again?
I think you would have to be surprised with just about anybody else. You know, maybe now looking back on it, you know, I might say that I wasn't, but even considering Tom Brady, yeah, there was some surprise that things went seemingly as seamless as they did. You know, he felt that there was some rust. He said there were plays that were left on the field those first couple of weeks back. But, you know, just to watch him perform the way he did in week four, then in week five, the way he has continued to play all season long with just the two interceptions, that he never ceases to amaze. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, has had this tremendous body of work in his career, Steve, and at the age of 39, still seemingly is getting better. When people ask what stands out about Tom Brady, and the thing that I'll say in my brief time covering him now, 4 years, is that at an age when a lot of guys are simply trying to hang on and, you know, maintain what they have and then overcome what they've lost, here's a guy who's expanding his repertoire. He's become more mobile the last couple of years. This season, he's been a better deep ball thrower than he's been the last few years. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised in retrospect, but absolutely, you know, there was some surprise after 4 weeks away from the team. Not just that he wasn't playing games, but he wasn't practicing with teammates. And to be able to pick up the way he did going back to the last days of training camp, pretty remarkable to say the least.
He, except for Randy Moss, he never has had a, quote, superstar receiver in the group. Now, I'm a big Julian Edelman guy. There's no question about that. But how amazing is it the way the Patriots fit parts and fit roles and make it work?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting in that regard, too, because I've heard some people say that, you know, Brady's a great quarterback, but a lot of it has to do with the system. And you know, perhaps he is the right fit for the system, but in my view, the system has evolved the way it has, and it's enabled the Patriots to bring in, you know, however many wide receivers they've had through the course of Tom Brady's, you know, 17 years on this team, and still they work like a machine, and I think that's a credit to him. And you know, you look at, like you say, the cast of receivers he's had and the different teammates on his championship teams. Now, granted, early on, they leaned heavily on their defense, and you know, Tom is a second-year quarterback, first-year starter, was a much different kind of quarterback than he is today. But to have won the four titles with, I think, different generations of teams, and certainly with a lot of different guys coming and going offensively at those skill positions, that, again, is a testament to just how special he is.
All right. The next part I want to get to is on defense. You know, Emmanuel Sanders was almost comical the other day talking about Butler. I mean, Butler shut him down. You called that great play in the Super Bowl where he stopped the Seahawks on the goal line with a great play. What kind of corner has he become, and what can Patricia do because of the fact that he has great corner play?
Well, he's become a very good cornerback. I think he certainly has put himself now among the best cornerbacks in the league. You know, in terms of the numbers, he's there with passes defended. Hasn't had the interceptions that some other guys have had. But I think when you look at, you know, the job that Malcolm's done on a consistent basis, you know, with exception maybe of a matchup last year against Antonio Brown, you know, Patriots generally have been able to put him on a guy and say, you know, shut him down. And he's done that. And even in that game, the season opener, 2015 against Brown, he was a productive receiver. And you look back at his stat line, you know, the numbers were very good for him. But it was an effort, a real effort for him to get to those numbers because of the competitiveness of Malcolm. you know, the thing that stands out is the tenacity. He's a guy who never gives up on a play, and I know that's cliched, but think back to last year's game for the Patriots and the Giants, and there was initially ruled a touchdown for Odell Beckham Jr., but because Butler didn't concede the play, knocked the ball out of Beckham's hands, when they went back and looked at it on replay, but contrary to what maybe other people thought, nonetheless, the official said, that's not a catch. By the definition of the rulebook, it's not a catch. It turned out to be a huge play that ultimately led to a game-winning field goal for Steven Gostkowski because the Giants had to settle for a field goal themselves rather than getting that touchdown. And the Butler's come up with a lot of different plays like that during his 2 years now as a starter for this team. He's been durable. He certainly came into this league as an unknown, as an undrafted free agent out of West Alabama. You know, he's a humble kid. As I said, you know, has this great competitive zeal. And I think the thing that he's allowed Matt Patricia to do is similar to what Darrell Revis had done here, is kind of scheme with the other guys. If you can put Butler on somebody and say, you know, take him out of the equation, then we can work with the rest of the defense, the secondary, to try to at least neutralize some other people. And Patriots have had a revolving door at that third cornerback spot this year. Logan Lyon has, I think, improved his play of late, and he's been a solid guy for them at the second cornerback spot. But that third cornerback has been an issue. Eric Rowe, the former Eagle, has helped to fill in nicely of late for them in that spot. But they certainly know they've got a true number one in Malcolm Butler.
The Patriots are on track to be the number one seed in the AFC. Bob, if they do get that, what does it mean to them playing at Gillette?
Well, it means, I don't want to say everything, but it means almost everything, Steve, because I think this team is capable of going on the road and winning, but they're almost unbeatable here at home. And I was chatting with my counterpart, Dave Logan, the other day, as the great voice of the Broncos, and he said, you know, the thing about the Patriots at home, they don't have to play well necessarily to win at home. And we've even seen that in the postseason for the last couple of years when they beat the Ravens in the 2014 divisional playoffs after falling behind twice by two touchdown margins. Or, for example, even last year in the divisional round, it wasn't a flawless performance against Kansas City, but they pulled it out. This team is nearly unbeatable in Foxborough, especially when you look at the postseason record. Now, save for what the Ravens have done a couple of times and what Rex Ryan's Jets did, you know, that's been the Patriots' track record. Last year was a critical turning point when they lost the number one seed down the stretch to the Denver Broncos and had to go to Denver. Certainly the crowd had a big influence on that game. The Patriots were a bit overwhelmed with the Denver pass rush. Broncos did a great job of anticipating the snap count. And the Patriots had a tough time adjusting. And you know, a lot of things have changed, but certainly for the Pats, they'd like to eliminate any possibility of a similar scenario this year by being here at home in Foxborough.
No team is going to be obviously perfect. I mean, some are just better than others. So what would your concern be? And maybe, you know, we can echo maybe what Scott says as well. What would your concern be about the Patriots that would be something that would be a potential weakness that could be exploited?
Yes, Steve, you know, I think it goes back to the point about the secondary in that third cornerback spot. Because, right, as you know, I mean, the NFL these days is a game of 5-6 defensive backs.
It's all sub-packages today, yeah.
The sub-defense is the base defense nowadays. And when you look at a team, for example, like the one in your neck of the woods, that didn't have Ben Roethlisberger at home and the Patriots beat the Steelers earlier this year, but would have him in a playoff matchup, with the weapons that Pittsburgh has, you know, with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and some of those other receivers they have, where maybe they can exploit now that second or third matchup, that I think could be a problem for the Pats. I think the defense has improved considerably over the course of the last month. You know, it's been an interesting year for the Patriots on that side of the ball because they've gone through some changes. They let Chandler Jones go in the offseason, you know, one of their high-profile pass rushers. They let Jamie Collins go during the season to Cleveland, certainly a dynamic athlete and a guy who's looked upon around the league as, you know, a freak in a lot of ways and a playmaker. But they've made adjustments in the absence of those two guys, and they've, I think over the course of time, a little experimentation and bringing some new people in, identified roles, and they become a solid defense. But still, I think there is a vulnerability, despite how well they played the last month. If you've got to line up, and now you got to worry about not just, you know, the number one and two receivers, but the third guy, and even, you know, in the case of the Steelers now, Ladarius Green wasn't available. when they met in the regular season, plus Bell coming out of the backfield, and D'Angelo Williams didn't play in the regular season against them. So Pittsburgh could be a team, for example, that could test the Patriots and really strain that secondary.
Last year, if there was an issue Tom Brady had last year, it was the youth of the offensive line. He was under constant pressure last year. I believe I heard in a broadcast you said last year that, you know, the percentage of times was up in the 30s, the number of times that he was pressured last year. How much has that dynamic up front changed, and what has that meant to Brady?
It's changed dramatically, and it's meant a lot. And it was reflected in the game on Sunday against the Broncos. You know, Dante Scarnecchia was in retirement for a couple of years. He was still consulting and doing a lot of scouting work for the Patriots, but a longtime assistant coach in this league and one of the more highly respected coaches in the NFL for three-plus decades, had been away from the team full-time. And Dave DeGuglielmo came in, and he did a good job overall, I think. You look back at 2014, there were a lot of issues early in that year, and they solidified enough to win a Super Bowl championship. But last year, as you mentioned, there was youth. Plus, there was, you know, inconsistency in the day-to-day lineup because of a lot of injuries. Nate Solder, the left tackle, was lost early in the year. And that meant playing a guy like Marcus Cannon out of position as a better fit at right tackle. Brian Stork was then a second-year center coming off injury. And he was a guy that would have some issues, certainly, that would affect his play during the course of 2015, as it turned out, really lead to his release by the Patriots before this season began. So they were going through a constant state of transition last year. I think one of the things they did by bringing Scarnecchia back is they not only got a great technician and a guy with a tremendous amount of expertise, but someone who relates extremely well to players, and also someone who has the stature in this league to say, look, this is the way we're going to do it. This is the way I'm going to do it, the way I want to do it. And that's built continuity. He said right from the start, I want to have the same five guys on that offensive line, and I want to shuffle people in and out, which was a byproduct, I think, of the situation, the circumstances last year. So they've had five guys for the most part, from day one this year, who've been together. Solder is back. He's played well. Cannon is a good fit at right tackle. He came into this season in better shape. Scarnecchia relates to both of those guys extremely well. They drafted Joe Tooney, a guard out of North Carolina State, and he's played just about every snap at left guard. Shaq Mason is a right guard who came out of an option program at Georgia Tech and has played well now in year two. And then David Andrews was a rookie free agent center last year, and he's been the starter for virtually every snap this season. And, what they've done is they've given Brady time to throw, but I think more so, too, they've given the Patriots a running game, which is something they didn't have last year. And here's LeGarrette Blount with 1,000 yards to his name and 15 rushing touchdowns, the franchise single-season record to his name. So they've become more balanced, and they've given the quarterback more time to throw when he does drop back.
There are two organizations I think of that seem to understand personnel and understand the shelf life of their current personnel better than anyone. That'd be the St. Louis Cardinals to me in baseball. I never see them get burned on a trade. And the New England Patriots. What is it about the eye Belichick has in conjunction with how Robert Kraft runs the organization where the Patriots just seem to have a really good handle on shelf life and also how parts fit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to Robert Kraft's credit, he's someone who learned from the early years of his ownership tenure. He had Bill Parcells here, and, the famous line about Parcells' departure, when they ask you to cook the dinner, they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries. And then Pete Carroll came in, and there were some issues between Bobby Greer and the personnel department for the Patriots and the head coach. And, that didn't go too well. And when Bill Belichick came back to New England, where he'd been an assistant coach, and Robert Kraft had developed a fondness for him, and Kraft gave him the reins. And, Belichick has had full say on personnel, obviously, as a head coach, and he's had a track record where rarely the Patriots have been burned by decisions. They have traded guys like Richard Seymour, like Larry Malloy, like Logan Mankins, that are Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber players, guys who've been captains and well-respected leaders in the locker room and caused a lot of controversy in New England and certainly affected the team in the short term. And yet, in the long run, those moves, for the most part, have panned out well. You just look at the decision that he made a couple of years ago when the Patriots had a $25 million option on Darrelle Revis, and they declined to exercise it, and he went to New York, and there was an outcry here. How could you let him go? He came here, and he won a world championship. And he's gone to a division rival again. He's back with the Jets. The Patriots secondary is weakened considerably. And as it turned out, a year and a half, well, now almost two full seasons into it, it was certainly the right decision. I just think that, in Bill's case, he's someone who, gets a lot of credit for being a football genius. And that certainly, I think in most cases, hyperbole. In his case, considering his track record, it's apropos. But I think a lot of times what gets overlooked is just the attention to detail and the understanding of what it truly takes to be a great team. And, we're talking about the Patriots defense right now, devoid of some stars, but it's becoming a good team, a good unit with a lot of teamwork. And Bill took all those lessons that he's gained through the years at the Naval Academy and his various stops in the NFL to understand it's about building a team, not collecting talent. And again, I know that's cliche, but to me, that's one of the biggest things that stands out about him is that people check their egos at the door here. Tom Brady is recognized and revered by teammates past and present as a guy who doesn't put individual goals above those of the team. And that's the culture that Belichick and Kraft have really created here. And I think part of that is just Bill's knowledge of history, his own history, again, being around those Naval Academy teams and wherever he's gone in the NFL, and truly understanding, what separates teams that have lasting success versus teams that are really talented that might have success here and there but don't sustain it.
One final question, Bob, and I'll let you go, and I appreciate the time very, very much. What has this been like for you to know that you have this kind of seat and chronicle this kind of excellence?
It's something you take for granted, for sure. I don't know if I really appreciated it when I came in. As much as I dreamed of an opportunity like this, Steve, I don't know that I fully appreciate it today. I certainly try to remind myself of that. I think about some of our colleagues who've caught a lot more games than I have and a lot fewer victories than I have. I've been very fortunate, on a week-in, week-out basis to see, the greatest quarterback of all time, in my opinion, coached by the best head coach in the history of the National Football League. And, maybe it's akin to what it was like, for all those years at Happy Valley and what it's become again, when you sit there in the midst of this tremendous atmosphere with, a team that's so successful that turns out good citizens, that get their degrees and are great players and go on to be Hall of Famers in the pro ranks. From my standpoint, I try not to take it for granted, but, it's easy to do sometimes. And, the fan base is so passionate. That's another part of the job that really, makes it gratifying and rewarding. But it also, allows you to keep yourself accountable and keeps you on your toes. As you mentioned at the top, I get long-winded when I talk about the Pats, even more so when I talk about Navy. I had 16 wonderful years calling Navy football in a very rewarding experience. And if I were to leave that job for any other, it would have been an opportunity like this. So it's all worked out, fabulously for me and my family. I couldn't ask for a better opportunity or better situation than the one I'm in.
Well, courtesy is serious. I hear you often. You're as precise and as exciting as anybody out there. Congratulations on a great run. Best of luck to you, Scott, all the Patriots organization down the road. And thanks so much. Happy holidays, Bob.
Hey, I really appreciate it. And, I want to say that a couple of weeks ago, Todd Rucci was in the booth with Zoe as Patriots reunited the 2001 team. And nobody was pleased in the booth, Zoe being from Western Pennsylvania as well, having been recruited by the Nittany Lions as a potential linebacker. Nobody was pleased that day when the playoff pairings were announced. So, the opinion there was universal. So I want you guys to know that back then, for what it's worth.
Appreciate it very much, but the Rose Bowl isn't bad.
No, not bad at all. Have a great call, Steve. Wonderful holiday.
You too, Bob. Thanks so much for your time. Happy holidays to you and that great family of yours.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Bob Soci, play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. Next half hour, John Oran, Sports Business Journal. Final half hour, Tim Jones, NFL Network. We're brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.